comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
From the bridge of the starship KSS, welcome to talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It is the show, of course, where you matter, and we're here because you have a right to know. If you breathed a sigh of relief on Saturday when the predicted end of the world did not happen, well, you're not off the hook yet. Harold Camping said yesterday that he had failed to understand that May 21st was not supposed to be Rapture Day. May the 21st, which was Saturday, was supposed to be a spiritual judgment day. And the world, according to Camping, is still going to end on October the 21st. So, it looks like we have five more months in the sweat box. I will bring you full details on October the 22nd. You know, for 11 years, I've been sitting at the mic here at KSS. Not continuously. I do get up and do things, you know. I'm not stuck here at the mic. But for 11 years, I have been doing this show, and for 11 years I've been publishing the K-Files, our free weekly newsletter. Some of our subscribers have been with us for 11 years. It's really the truth. We've got some of the subscribers who have been with us for 11 years. And that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. It means it's a good publication. And it's free, and there's really no reason for you not to be receiving this publication. Ask yourself, where's the genius in that? Where's the genius in not receiving the free, that's F-R-E-E, free, official publication of one of the world's top talk shows in the genre? You can unsubscribe anytime you want, and it'll help you if you are subscribed. It'll help you to not be in the dark, because we always have an article called The Inside Scoop. It tells you what's going on inside the show here. We also have articles that have nothing to do with the show, but have everything to do with the kinds of things we talk about. So we have articles and links to articles. We have links to videos for you to take a look at, and they are related to our genre as well. And so there's really no genius in not getting it. All you have to do is get over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click that big link staring you right in the face, right in the middle of the screen that says K-Files, and subscribe. And then when you get the confirmation email, there's a link in there for you to use to activate your subscription so that you will begin to receive the K-Files. No reason not to. I hope you'll do it today. Also, we have a members area with lots of goodies in it, and it's only 23 cents a day. You could be watching the show right now. We'll be back right after this.
Doctor spewing nonsense about UFOs and extraterrestrials who is about to run away in fear. This is The Kevin Smith Show.
Yes, indeed. If you are a spin doctor, get your Nikes on. You're going to need them. My guest tonight has been with us before, and boy, I'll tell you what, every time he's with us, we have a good time. We always get good information from Sam Maranto, who is the Illinois State Director for MUFON. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Kevin, it's always a pleasure.
Sam, there have been some weird reports coming out. You know, I follow, every day I'm on the internet searching for information, and there are certain sites that I follow, and then others that I just pick up along the way. But one of the things I always take a look at are the new reports coming out from MUFON. And right after you were on the show, which was what, just a couple of weeks ago?
Yes.
Yeah. Right after you were on the show, these reports came out that some people in Illinois, one report said they saw a translucent UFO. Sort of almost transparent, but not quite. And I think there were five witnesses to that one, I think. Now, I may get these mixed up. But there was another report of people who saw a UFO that morphed into something that looked like a jetliner. And it's not the first time I've heard those kind of reports, but yeah. Every time you hear them, at least for me, they go in that category of, man, that's weird. What's happening over in Illinois?
Well, Kevin, we've had, that I could recall, three accounts recently of what would be translucent UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
The first one that I received actually came in March, and the funny thing about it was the gentleman called me stating that he had seen this object at a specific location. And where was I? Exactly at that location. And I asked the guy, says, you have to be kidding me. You're calling me now, and I'm actually here. He goes, well, it was on LaGrange Road, just out of Orland Park, and it would have been, I believe, 167th Street. And there is a gas city on one side, on the east side, and the other side is a forest preserve. He was traveling down the road, and he was a teacher. He is a teacher in the community. He also has a background in being a mechanic and a machinist. Seeing this object in the sky, he says it was so unusual, but it was discernible. It was cloaking the backdrop of the clouds. Yet he has this ability to notice close tolerances, and he could see that there's a variation along an edge. He pulls over into the forest preserve area, gets out, looks up to the clear sky there, and sees that it's right below a bunch of clouds, and it's moving along. And he felt it was no more than maybe 800 to 1,000, 1,500 feet or so above him, and he said it was massive. It was easily the size of the fuselage of a 747. And he could distinguish the exterior border, and he says it went across the street and took a 90-degree turn and moved off, and he says that's what really blew his mind.
Now, when he says,
"What I had,"
okay. Now, when he says that it was easily the size of the fuselage of a 747, is he saying it's as far across this thing as a 747 is long, or what's he describing here? What was the shape of it?
Well, it was just a cigar-shaped object. And it looked to be about the size of a 747's fuselage.
Mm. But no wings, right? He didn't see the outline of any wings.
No wing whatsoever. And what really took him aback was the fact that it moved then at a 90 degree without any banking or anything. It just 90 degree, and that was it.
Uh-huh.
There was no banking.
Now, do you know, had this fellow ever seen a UFO before?
I think this gentleman actually seen something else, and it wasn't in Illinois. I forget where it was. But he had another sighting.
Uh-huh.
And he did pay attention to skies just as a matter of habit, but it wasn't really what you would say a buff, per se. A very sound, level-headed person. And I just found it odd that he called me when I was right there. And this happened a few days prior. This being, you know, the start of these translucent, it wasn't my first encounters with these translucent type UFOs either, by the way. And I'll talk about an older case.
Yeah, and I found some video of translucent, not transparent, but translucent UFOs going back to 2005. And probably they go back further, but that's as old a video as I found.
These things, if you put on, let's say, third generation night vision or IR, even during the day, you would be able to see them. In fact, John Stevenson, who is my co-host and host on the show, another show, very good friend of mine, he has actually recorded on surveillance video two UFOs in Frankfort, Illinois. And he did that just out of just as a quirk. He had it sitting out there shooting in the sky, and the reason why he did it, he says, why on earth, he had heard that it was going to be illegal to own third generation or IR glasses for some reason. And he was saying, well, what are they trying to hide? Well, here he points to the sky and he picks up two of the best images of UFOs going through clouds that I've ever seen. But obviously, you wouldn't be able to see them except in that range of the IR. And that was during the day.
Okay, now, you know, I've heard something about that, too, that people would not be able to own the third generation infrared equipment. But that was about, I don't know, a year or longer ago, and I haven't heard anything else about that recently. What's up with that? Is that a reality now?
I don't know what the status is. My brother, who's actually standing across the room from me, would probably know the status of the IR becoming illegal or the third generation. He says it's not. It hasn't been approved, so he hasn't heard anything recently.
All right, so this was in March. You had this report, and then you were on the show, and shortly after being on the show, these other reports came in out of Illinois. People saw a translucent UFO, and then somebody saw one that morphed, changed its shape from a saucer shape into the shape of a jetliner. Now, let's take that one. That's a pretty unusual UFO report, but again, it's not unique. There are people that have reported that sort of thing before. What do you think about that? I mean, are people actually seeing that happen, or do you think there's some sort of trick of light, or maybe Chinese wedding candles?
Yeah, how about it? I think it could be very well be a drone. It could also be a misperception on the perspective, on how they were looking at it. It could have been just a jetliner. That case is still it's open, and it was I have somebody assigned to it. Though there have been cases of UFOs with wings, and they go back quite some time. The minute I think of something with wings, I think of the term a plane. And if you were to recall the original and real LA battle, battle over LA, they had mentioned armadas of planes in the sky, unidentified planes. Now, I don't know if there was a terminology for anything that was flying, but from some of the drawings, it seemed that they did have wings.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I would say that, yeah, some of these pictures and drawings do have wings. Now, morphing, usually morphing, when they said it, it morphed into something with wings, gosh, I think more of the really bizarre stuff that seems to be nebulous, that could move almost as if it's living. I think that those are more disturbing, and they'll take on forms, but some being described as looking like something with wings. But I think this may very well have been a misidentification.
Well, I'll tell you something, and this is not new to the audience that's been with us for years. Years ago, while I was still broadcasting in Phoenix, and this was, I've been gone from Phoenix now, it'll be a year next month, but I was in Phoenix for a number of years, and this was several years ago, and some of you will remember that I used to live right up next to South Mountain. I've talked about it. I've told you about it. You could walk out of my backyard and go a couple of blocks, and you were on South Mountain. So I used to live right up next to it. Now, this story, Sam, I told on the air, and I got people, a few people, not very many, but I got a few people that emailed me and said I needed to go see a doctor. But at the time, there were two commercial airline pilots that saw this with me. There was a jetliner with no markings flying above South Mountain. And it was not flying toward the Sky Harbor International Airport. It was flying as if it were just, maybe it was going to spray paint a stripe across the ridge, the length of South Mountain. That's the way it was flying. And it got down to one point. I'm guessing it must have been, at that point, it must have been 8 to 10 miles downrange from us. But it passed right in front of us as it passed over the South Mountain directly behind our house. And then, as it was about 8 to 10 miles downrange, it stopped in the air, and it was there for about 20 minutes. And I told that story on the air. People said, that's nuts, that's crazy. Not everybody said that, but I got a few emails like that. And I understand. Yeah, it is nuts. It is crazy. I certainly would not have been on the air talking about a jetliner. That's so normal, so mundane, I wouldn't have been talking about it. The reason I was talking about it is because of what it did. And then when it did start to move again, it moved very rapidly and climbed very rapidly into high altitude. Now, the altitude at which it went over the mountains was estimated by one of the pilots to have been somewhere between 3,000 and 4,500 feet. So it wasn't that high.
Mm-hmm.
And it was making no noise.
That's odd.
Yeah. Yeah, that's odd.
The thing is, we have technology that can probably do that. I'm convinced of that. The other thing is, we have people visiting us, why couldn't they duplicate at least the simplest thing, is the exterior appearance of something?
Well, you know, we're trying to back engineer their stuff. Why couldn't they do ours?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that would make all the sense in the world. I have seen, in fact, I know South Mountain pretty well. 80 pounds lighter, I used to hike out there and have a good time. the I've also seen out there UAVs, and but then again, back to depictions and petroglyphs, it's not uncommon to see crosses that appear more like airplanes, and in some instances too. Or there.
Well, there's a lot of weird stuff that shows up out there over South Mountain and over Phoenix. And a lot of that weird stuff is depicted in those very ancient petroglyphs. Those people saw it too.
Yes. And they're over 13,000 years old at a minimum.
Yeah, yeah, at a minimum. All right, now, you know, I asked you this the last time you were here. I'm bound to ask it again. Why Illinois? Illinois, I believe, has a UFO alert status of 5, is that right?
We're usually up there. And the funny thing about it is what gets reported isn't everything. And the CMS files probably about one-third to half of what we get. We get call-ins. We get people, you know, say, "Hey, Sam, I saw this." I had a pilot call me the other day. Seen something. I had actually had 3 phone calls on the way back from the conference, so I get calls usually every day about something. So what appears in the CMS is generally a fraction of what we actually get.
Okay, so why Illinois?
Yeah, why Illinois? I think, first of all, we have so much activity as far as technology and you know, we have 2 cyclotrons. We have, in fact, there's an interesting story about some of the activity around there, too. We have 13 nuclear power plants. We do get a lot of activity in and around those cities that do have nuclear power plants. We have, I don't even know how many airports. We have one of the largest cities in the area, Chicago, Rockford. A very big city. We have had multiple sightings out there, in fact.
Okay, we have to step away for break, but I want to pick up right there with why Illinois when we come back from this break. There's got to be good reasons. There have to be good reasons. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Sam Maranto. He is the Illinois State Director for MUFON, and we're in the middle of getting an answer from him as to why Illinois. There seem to be really a lot of UFO sightings and some very unusual UFO sightings in Illinois, and I've asked the question, why? Why Illinois? Sam, you said we have 13 nuclear power plants. You said we have airports, major airports. What else is it that you've got there in Illinois that that seems to be attractive to these UFOs?
One thing we have determined, in fact, you know, Kufos and Roger, Mark Rodiger and I, we were talking about this, and really what it boils down to in the end, it's population. We have more people looking up at the skies and a higher population, and it seems as though when you cross-reference this, where you have your higher incidence of sightings, you usually have the population. Now, when you take population out of the equation, you know, some of the things that I personally feel is the fact that we're right here in the Midwest next to the Great Lakes. I'm relatively certain we have A lot of activity coming out of the lakes. I've had confirmation on that from witnesses on multiple occasions, not just here in Illinois, but Wisconsin. As you know, I'll do research all over the place. And, you know, I think we're also getting some high reversed engineered or advanced technology being flown in about the community, too, throughout the state.
Which of the Great Lakes are you next to?
Lake Michigan, and we also have quite a few small lakes in Illinois that are pretty big, like reservoirs.
Mm-hmm.
But Lake Michigan, of course, is right here.
Are there any type of naval installations along the Great Lakes?
Well, we used to have Great Lakes. The air wing up north. Naval air base, but as far as naval, we used to have Navy Pier. We still have Navy Pier, but there really isn't any. There's only Coast Guard out of there. But
so there's not any big Navy activity around.
No.
Okay. Well,
Air Force, on the other hand, that's a different story.
All right, tell us about the Air Force. How big and busy is the Air Force in Illinois?
Well, we had, you know, the retired Rantoul base, and we've had a few other places such as Scott's up north. We have McCoy in Wisconsin. We have other air wings, smaller air wings assigned, say, for instance, out by the Rock Island Arsenal, and I believe there is some activity there of possibly stopping, refueling, or housing of higher technology on occasions. And there are other smaller bases.
So what about, secret laboratories and things like that, like Los Alamos we know about out in New Mexico? You got anything like that in Illinois?
I think we have underground facilities that may be tied into some of the workings of, say, deep tunnel projects that may be locked into that or unknowingly functioning in that vein. I think there are underground facilities in Illinois. I'm not the expert on that, but I just think there are. The thing is, we have so much UFO activity, and again, back to these translucent ones, I think if people were to make use of IR and infrared, you know, the infrared and ultraviolet third generation glasses and stuff, they would see things everywhere.
Well, you know, the shapes of the UFOs that get reported seem to have changed down through history. For instance, what Kenneth Arnold saw was certainly not a flying saucer. What Kenneth Arnold saw as he was flying his airplane, I believe, in Washington State, he had pictures drawn of that, and it's sort of a batwing-looking craft. Semicircle with sort of a batwing configuration on the back. And it certainly was not what people refer to as flying saucers. Of course, flying saucer is something that's a phrase that was made up by the media. And once that was out there, everyone was seeing flying saucers. And that isn't what Kenneth Arnold reported. But everybody began to see flying saucers. And we're still seeing and getting video of these circular or elliptical shaped craft, and then people began seeing these cigar shaped craft, very large, and then I don't know, sometime around I think it was in the 90s, people began seeing the triangular craft. Now my question, and now here we are with translucent craft that people began reporting in the 2000s. So Do you think there's any kind of significance in this progression of different types of UFOs being reported? Is there any significance in that, or what's the story there?
I think what it is, if you're going to report something, you better report something that has already been reported. In other words, that is a scenario, that is a UFO, or that is a disc-shaped object, therefore it's odd as it is, but if I've seen something else besides that, they'd really think I'm crazy. Back in the airship 1896-97, everything seemed to have been more of the cigar-shaped type object, and it wasn't. We had a variation of things. It was far more complicated than that. We had over 1,500 articles, news articles, across the country. So heaven knows how many sightings there were. It had to have been thousands for have that much being reported. Obviously, when you have the majority of them being similar to craft that they know, such as airships, though they weren't powered airships at that time, that would be the first thing that somebody would want to report, is something that they could already say, well, it is like this, or it's already something that somebody else has seen. By reporting something even more unusual, probably would make it more absurd. And that's, I think, the scenario. For example, the triangular craft we started to see on a major scale in the 1980s. Yet accounts, at least from my research, go back to the 1800s. And then, of course, into the 1500s, if you were to look at some of the wood carvings from the 1500s. So just because they haven't been, and there is a 1954 memo with a concern of very, very large triangular UFOs being seen. So we have accounts, we have historical accounts of triangular craft, but they haven't made that much publicity, or they haven't been seen on, they haven't been acknowledged or reported on that large of a scale.
Well, that's very easy to buy, because we all know how faithfully the news media report the facts. So, yeah. Okay, so Illinois is a hot spot, and there's a lot of UFO activity. A variety of UFOs are being seen. Are we making any progress in getting to the bottom of the UFO information? Are we just spinning our wheels? Are we making any progress?
I think we are. I think one thing, at least, I think a large percentage of us are starting to accept the intradimensional possibility that these things are manipulating dimensions, and that could be another twist to make things far more complicated. But it can account for the violations of basically Newtonian physics. So, I mean, that's one thing.
You know, one of the big theories that's out there right now about how these UFOs propel themselves, what is their means of propulsion? And one of the big theories is gravity manipulation. And so by using gravity manipulation, you don't have to travel anywhere near the speed of light to travel light years in virtually no time, a very small amount of time. And so that's one of the theories that's out there. And what's interesting about that is precisely what Bob Lazar said. And Bob Lazar got pretty much booed out of the theater. The press and even the UFO community jumped all over this guy, and they said, well, you know, he's a fraud, and yet what we're beginning to find out is that the stuff he said is actually becoming accepted as a reality, that it has to be that way. And then you have to ask yourself, okay, if he was a fake, how did he know?
Good point. I always thought there was legitimacy, at least to a good percentage of what he was saying. And again, going back to many of the nuts and bolts ufologists, when you're hearing this, to have this become a potential reality, you come into that kicking and scratching, and you're dragged into it. You know, any violation of Newtonian physics is going to just violate your basic understanding, and these are principles of science that you just don't want to walk away from.
Well, yeah, but you know, Einstein violated Newtonian physics, and of course he was ridiculed and laughed at, and I mean, they said terrible things about him. I'm talking about, you know, the bulls of academia, scientific academia. They just made all kinds of jokes about Einstein and everything, but guess what? We don't even remember them, and everybody knows Einstein. And the reason he was right, they were wrong. But even Einstein said that he didn't have all of the answers, that there were still big questions to answer. And so some smart person is going to come along and step right over the Einsteinian physics, and we're going to have a whole new reality. And so I guess what I'm saying is people that are stuck in Newtonian physics are stuck in something already long past.
Absolutely. And most of them, many of the people who, many of the astronomers are stuck there. They don't even have a clue where we are currently in physics. And I find that odd. But, the thing is, science is tentative, and it is meant to be tentative. We are to explore, and we are to question, and we are to pursue. We should be pursuing new questions, not settling on answers. That's what keeps the brain going. That's what science is meant to do. It is to question and to say why.
Now we have to step away for break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, Sam Maranto. Sam, we were talking about physics, and we were talking about how, the mindset of scientists is really being shaken up pretty regularly now, and that's a good thing, actually, from my point of view. But it's happening to people that are not scientists as well. And we're being confronted with things we thought we would never see. We thought, politically, socially, economically, we're being confronted with things that we thought we would never see. Geologically, we're seeing things on a regular basis now that we thought we would never see in our lifetimes. And so it may be just a little bit easier for people to get over it and accept this interdimensional aspect of these UFOs. However, I have to tell you that based on the physics involved, I'm still not real sure that we're talking about interdimensional in that if they are getting here by manipulating gravity, creating or generating an attraction to a gravity of a planet and actually pulling space-time together, and bingo, they're there, which is the theory now, maybe it would give, as they appear in our dimension, maybe it would give them the appearance of interdimensionality, and maybe they're not truly interdimensional. What do you think about that?
Very good point, because another interesting thing that I've been pondering for a few years now is the our understanding of matter. And I think once we get a better grasp on matter, first of all, most people don't even realize that atoms are in flux, and matter isn't, the state of solid isn't really solid.
Mm-hmm.
So matter could be many different things, and the states of matter are gas, you know, liquid, solid. That's solid with a question mark over it. Of course, in a state of flux, which would just be a current in one direction or two directions, but they're going in specific ways. And then, of course, plasma, fifth being the flux. I personally feel there's more states to that, and where we'll come to learn more about that is when we can understand the principles that will keep atoms together and formulate the perception, our perception of a solid. And I think one of the things that's coming out of the understanding of the Hutchinson effect, I think, is the some of the effects that are being observed on matter. And that's pretty impressive. And I've actually, I think, worked on one case. That was the Lakeshore, the North Lake Carr case, where the car was there was the indentation, and the woman's car was moved, and she couldn't figure out what happened. She didn't see any UFO. Heck, there wasn't even any cars on the road, but yet there were some definite effects to the car, obvious damage and affects the paint that was very unusual too. So all this could have been done by some type of energy field. And I think all it did was just manipulate the energies that hold the atoms and molecules together.
Are you familiar with Charles Hall?
Yes.
You know, Charles Hall has written a series of books. I think it's Millennium Hospitality is the name of the series. He's been on the show a number of times. I've met him personally a couple of times. And he, as a matter of fact, I interviewed him for the show face-to-face once. And have had the opportunity just to meet with him socially as well. Now, he tells a story about these tall whites that are out at a base that he says was built for them by the U.S. military, by the U.S. Air Force, at a place called Indian Springs. And he says that the spaceships that they are using, that they're flying, coming and going, that the parts that go in them, he's been in those spaceships, and the parts that are in them are manufactured by companies right here on Earth. Now, that being the case, if they're manufacturing the parts for those alien spacecraft, then they're manufacturing parts they could put together and have our own spacecraft.
Oh, definitely. And I think you hit the nail on the head as far as why we have so much activity, at least in some areas here in Illinois. Contractors.
All right, now, he also has something very interesting called the Hall photon theory. And I don't know if you're familiar with that. but it makes so much sense. And, you know, I really would recommend everybody, if you haven't read the Hall Photon Theory, I think you can find it online, and you can read it, and you really should. It makes so much sense. And
I
it would
know it by something else. What is it? A photon theory?
Yeah, Hall Photon Theory.
Because photons are very focal on much of the phenomena.
Yeah. And but he's in my opinion he's probably on the right track with that Hall photon theory. And you know, the point of what I'm saying is that the technology, if we take what Charles Hall has told us as being true, and of course it's up to everyone to make up their own mind about that. I'm not promoting it as true. I'm saying, you know, if you assume that it is true, then what he has told us is that the technology to build these so-called UFOs already exists. And the idea that we're back engineering, that is old news. We're not back engineering. We're manufacturing current UFOs for the extraterrestrials, meaning we could do it for ourselves.
That, you know, anything's possible. You know, the another theory as far as UFOs, and I think this is another aspect to this, is the old Earth theory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, old civilization, ancient astronauts. There have been many civilizations here with advanced technology, and I'm certain they had this technology. Why isn't it that a breakaway civilization, in the truest sense, that really segregated themselves and may have decided to go inside deep tunnels or really isolate themselves on this planet and take this technology with them in the ocean? Who knows? That's a possibility too.
It is indeed. All right, we have a break coming up, and when we come back from this break, I want to get into what happened during this conference that you just spoke at. During this conference, there was a very strange event that took place, a very strange phenomena that you were told about. I want the people to hear about it. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to The Kevin Smith Show, like no other talk radio on earth.
Welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Sam Maranto. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here. And my sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour. Sam, I know I said that we were going to talk about that strange phenomena that someone told you about during this conference. But before we do that, let me ask a question, another question about these translucent UFOs that are being reported over Illinois. Do you think, because we were talking about the various states of matter, do you think that when we see a translucent UFO, that we're looking at a UFO that is in the process of phasing from one state of matter to another?
Yes, or also could be in popping in through the dimension. The other thing is we may have an exhibition of another state of matter.
Okay.
And that, I think, is what you alluded to.
All right. Now, you spoke at a conference over the weekend. Tell us about this conference. What was it? Where was it?
We have conferences quite a bit. This was a mini conference here in Illinois, and we have our state meetings and our investigator training sessions at the Starved Rock Lodge in Utica, Illinois, and it's beautiful. It's a historical location. It was built in 1933 by the CCC. It's really one of the treasures of Illinois, and the area is gorgeous. It has these dells, waterfalls, canyons, and it's also the spot where Western civilization, you know, Europeans met and dealt with in a very hospitable environment with Native Americans. And some 18,000 Native Americans and Europeans would trade right at this very location. So it was the location that we decided to incorporate and have as our home base in Illinois. As we say, it is mutually inconvenient for everybody in the state.
It must truly be in the middle of nowhere.
It is. It's right smack dab in the middle of the state, but right where the northern section meets the central section, right off of I-80 and just east of 39. Beautiful area. And if you're in the area, folks, do visit it. It's well worth it. And there's some 3,000 visitors there a year. So it is truly a great destination, you know, and it's a treasure here in the Midwest. So getting back to the conference, we decided to have a very long one-day conference, and we always incorporate witness testimony. And I think that's very important. We get somebody up there to tell their own personal accounts of their unusual experiences. And there's always somebody in the audience that says that, you know, well, I can relate to that. And that's very nice. And many a time, most people here recant, you know, us recount their circumstances, but we like to hear the witnesses speak themselves. And we had also, as far as speakers, we of course had Don Smith out there, and Don Smith carried a lot of weight as far as his knowledge on Roswell. And he addressed the current new theory of the week club about the teenage mutant Nazis driving these Stalin Horton wings over here, but now they changed the disc. That's funny enough. But then we had some witnesses. Well, one of the witnesses came home that night and had a very unusual experience. He called me the next day, which was Sunday, stating that when he was coming home, an unusual red light. In fact, the wife's, her description was that it was a red ball, a water ball is what it looked like, a ball of water in the sky, and in the center of it was a whitish light, and it exploded. Very unusual. And the best description, he said, would be if you saw the beginning of the first episode of 4400, which I didn't see. There's a graphic and rendition of something that looks very similar to this.
And this happened during the conference, right?
This happened right afterwards. Right after this gentleman left, it was that evening on his way back home to Canton, Illinois. And the other thing is, I had multiple reports. I had a report, I believe it was from Oneonta, of a large orange orb with a reddish section. Then I had another pilot call in from Beecher that I haven't even had a chance to get in touch with him yet. So we had three reports come in on that night.
So the night the conference ends, you get three reports.
Correct. And that was also the night prior to all this unusual, the tornadoes, that hit Joplin,
yeah,
Missouri.
Uh-huh.
And we hit some bad storms out here also.
Any connection, you think?
Well, as a general rule, before major storms or earthquakes, and that's something we've been trying to stay on top of, especially the earthquake phenomena, there seems to be UFO activity before and during seismic, serious seismic events. New Zealand, there were UFO sightings before, during, and currently there are still UFO sightings. Also strange aerial phenomena, very unusual phenomena.
Okay, well, like what?
Japan, where blue openings in the sky, streaks of light of blue and red, things that we were not, I don't even know what to categorize them as, very unusual.
And where were these seen?
Out of Christchurch, not far from there.
Uh-huh. And this was before the big earthquake at Christchurch?
This was afterward.
Afterward?
UFOs were seen before, during, and still getting UFO activity. From my reports.
Okay, now you've been at this for a long time, many years. Do you have any theory as to why there seems to be this correlation between UFO sightings and then big disasters?
I think that's two, well, probably multiple theories there, but two in particular. That A, that there is an interest. Two is possibly because of the discharge, piezoelectric discharge, that there could possibly be a disturbance in what would normally cloak the objects, making them more vulnerable to be seen. In other words, it's conducive for the technology to be seen or to portray itself in its natural state.
There is another theory, the vulture theory.
Yes.
The vulture theory is that, you know, and I know about this from living in the desert. If you have an animal that is out in the desert and it's either injured or it's been out there too long and it's dying of heat stroke or whatever, but it's now in the last stages of life, the vultures don't wait until it's dead to show up. They start circling before the creature is dead. And you can look up in the sky out in the desert, you see a bunch of vultures circling. There is something that either is dying or has just died. And so, you know, the vulture theory is that they just come to watch the misery.
Yes, that is a possibility. The other thing is, what exactly are the occupants of the UFOs? And this goes to another theory and has to do with some observations and analysis of some very unusual photographs that I have had from cases that depict beings or entities holding orbs or retrieving translucent orbs. Are these translucent orbs having to do anything with maybe a consciousness or a soul? Are they collecting things?
And are they causing, you know, are they causing the earthquakes?
Yeah, that's a possibility too. In other words, they could be there instigating. They could also be calming down or trying to neutralize the energy. There are so many things. You know, it's all speculation, but it's good speculation. And it starts with speculation first to establish your you know, to evolve to a hypothesis and a theory. And all it is just observation and collecting the data. That's what we need to do, is to establish the evidence. you know, collect the evidence. And
well, let's talk about a case. Let's talk about a case where there is a lot of evidence, regardless of what the skeptobunkers say. There's a lot of evidence for Roswell. And, I mean, we pretty much know what did and did not happen at Roswell. There's this new book out by Annie Jacobson. It's called Area 51. And Annie, of course, is a reporter. So she's one of the lamestream media's darlings. And she's getting a lot of airplay. She's getting a lot of press about her book, Area 51. And I have to tell you, quite frankly, quite honestly, the theory she puts forth in there about Roswell is one of the most ridiculous things I have ever read.
Oh, God. It's. I think that one takes the cake. Oh, a little added bit of information. The gentleman and his wife who saw this object was at the conference for a particular reason. He was there to meet with Don Schmidt for the first time because he is my witness that I have all rights to his story. And his story is that he knew one of the doctors that worked on the bodies at, from Roswell. And I've been doing research on this going on almost 3 years. And he is one of two individuals that I have the identities of, and I'm going to be bringing forward. So,
are you going to bring him forward to the Kevin Smith Show?
Oh, absolutely, sure.
If we could get someone like that on the show, it would be wonderful because we'd like to talk with someone as close to the information as possible.
Definitely.
All right, now. Annie Jacobson's story goes like this. For those of you out there who don't know Annie Jacobson's story, it goes like this. Something did crash near the Roswell Air Base. It was very real, very genuine. It did crash. But what crashed was not a UFO. What crashed was a Horton flying wing that the Russians had captured at the end of World War II. Now, if you don't know what a Horton flying wing looks like, think of our stealth fighter. It looks very similar to that. Very, very advanced aircraft design, and the Nazis had it at the end of World War II. We didn't come out with it until just a few years ago, so I don't know how advanced we are. But anyway, a Horton craft, Horton flying wing, was captured by the Russians at the end of World War II. Dr. Mengele came over to the Russian side and was doing some work for Joey Stalin. And what crashed was this Horton flying wing with a crew of some really grotesquely deformed children that Mengele had caused to be deformed. And then the real kicker in this is that it was remotely piloted. It was piloted by remote control. And Stalin apparently wanted to crash this thing in order to create panic, because he was impressed with Orson Welles' War of the Worlds broadcast and how everybody had panicked. So he said, "Okay, let's crash something where everybody will think it really is a UFO, and let's cause panic in America." That's the story. Now, when you folks stop laughing and, you know, you get yourself sort of pulled together a little bit here, let's think about this. And, Sam, I want you to just jump in with anything at any time that you want to add to what I'm going to say here.
Well, first, right off the bat, let's work with the math. Let's say at this time and to this date, we're still not time traveling. Mangala, and at first, let's say the children were supposed to be 13-year-old mutant pilots. 13 would take, and 47 would take them back to 1934. He didn't become a doctor till 1938, and I believe up until 41, he was still just a soldier. So there, qualifications right off the bat. The other thing, to have children being born or to being susceptible to being mutants, you would have to first have this in place. Now, of course, we've had things throughout history where we've mutilated people or children at birth, but this, what they were explaining, is something far more complex than that. So that's wrong. The next thing is they were talking about that they wanted it to, these craft and individuals, to look like a depiction of War of the World type creatures. Nothing at all like the 1898 Orson Welles illustrations of creatures. Which
you mean H.G. Wells?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you mean H.G. Wells,
1890. H.G. Wells, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm doing great tonight. H.G. Wells, or the Worlds of 1898. So that was just all wrong. And so you have many different things going wrong, and you don't take a piece of sophisticated hardware. The other thing is we received what was there as far as the Horton wings, and destroyed the rest of them. There was one that was taken. The rest were destroyed. They were burnt, as I recall.
Well, now let me throw some things into the stew here. If Annie Jacobson's theory is anywhere even near correct, then we have to make some assumptions that really go beyond even what people, open-minded people in the UFO community, can make. For instance, she says that this is Joseph Stalin's plan to create panic in America, and that they had this Horton wing. And okay, now, folks, get a map of the United States of America and find Roswell, New Mexico. Now, I don't care which direction you come, you have to fly across hundreds of miles of the United States to get there. Roswell, New Mexico is not accessible easily from anywhere. Well, I mean, they don't want to hear me say that, but I mean, obviously there are highways that get you there. But I'm talking about, you know, if you're flying in, you got to fly over a whole bunch of America to get there.
Right, you would have to have had an aircraft carrier. Imagine that, an aircraft carrier off the coast of, what, Texas or something? That's insane. A Russian aircraft carrier?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so next, here's what we would have to presume. With the aircraft carrier, as you say, we would have to presume that this Horton flying wing flew across hundreds of miles of America to get to Roswell undetected. Now, we're at the end of World War II. We're at the very beginnings of the Cold War. Brand new radar has been deployed in 1946, and this radar is, for the time, it was state of the art. And so you've got to be able to assume that they were able to fly a Horton wing across hundreds of miles of America with its new state-of-the-art radar undetected. Plus, during the war, and there are some of you listening to me right now who are the people I'm talking about, during the war, there were literally thousands of people trained to look at the skies and identify the aircraft that they could see flying over. And if they saw something that didn't match American aircraft, they were to report it immediately. And there were thousands of you folks out there, thousands across America. So not only did this Horton escape radar, it escaped the eyes of thousands of people who were trained to spot enemy aircraft. And it was able to get right up next to the only nuclear-armed air wing on the planet. It did all of this without ever being detected and never being challenged by U.S. fighter planes. Furthermore, it was piloted remotely, according to Annie Jacobson. Now, folks, in order to pilot something remotely, you have to have contact with it. You have to have radio contact. Without satellites, you're dealing with line-of-sight contact, principally. And once you get out of radio range, once the thing gets out of radio range, you can't control it anymore. There were no satellites, not any, of any kind, from any nation in 1947.
Now, there is an important point that Annie probably doesn't know. There are no satellites. And they could have said, well, you know how, cite an example, well, you see how we could do things remote controlled, you know, today, you know, and it's no different then or whatever.
Yeah, well, it sure was. There were no satellites.
None.
Zero satellites. And so, you know, the whole story is, well, in my opinion, it's ludicrous. I can't believe she even published it. And I don't know Annie, and I'm not attacking Annie, but I can't believe you would publish something like that without checking these facts out.
And she took the supposed one source. Again, she doesn't really have any names. And as Don pointed out, he says, you know, understand this. I personally have spoken to over 500 people, know their names, brought people forward, and she's talking about one individual that she can't even name, and nothing remotely except for a disc comes into play with their story.
Now, what do you mean by that? Nothing remotely comes into play,
sure,
except a disc?
There was a disc. She's saying it was a disc that went down, and that is what everybody says did come down with his witnesses from Roswell, a disc. But there's nothing about mutant human children in there. These things, whoever came in contact with the entities, they clearly stated that they were little people, but not humans like us.
All right, we have to step away for break. We come back. There is yet another big, huge reason why this latest story has to be put in the same category as weather balloons and Chinese wedding candles. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Sam Maranto, and we are talking about UFOs, as you would suspect. And we're talking at this point about the book that has come out, Area 51, and it's written by Annie Jacobson. And I said there's one other really big thing here. Major Jesse Marcel was the air intelligence officer for the 509th Air Wing, which was the only nuclear-armed air wing on the planet. This makes Major Jesse Marcel the top, the cream of the crop, air intelligence officer. And this is something that a lot of the skeptobunkers try to gloss over, and they try to say he truly misidentified the wreckage, and it really was part of a balloon. That's what the skeptobunkers say. That's just ridiculous. But here we've got a foreign Russian craft captured from the Germans, and it flies hundreds of miles over the United States of America, crashes right up close to the 509th. They send Jessie Marcel out there, and her story, if it's true, has Jessie Marcel, the top air intelligence officer in the United States, the top, the best of the best, the cream of the crop, looks at this, and he does not know. You have to presuppose that he's never, ever seen a picture of a Horton flying wing. He's never seen a Horton flying wing, and so he mistakes it, and he says it's not from this world. Now, that's just the most ridiculous story that I can imagine. Well, it's more ridiculous. At least it's equally ridiculous with he mistook a weather balloon.
Same category.
Same category.
They're just painting it with multiple layers of nonsense. And
well, you know, American universities give degrees in that. It's called a BS degree.
Most certainly.
Yeah.
And here you have, you know, everybody on that base at that period of time had security clearances. These, even probably the cooks, who knows. But the bottom line is Jessie Marcel knew what a Horton flying wing was, no doubt about it. Advanced technologies, even things that they were working on. So this is the 509th. This is the most elite group. They had the bomb. I mean, people don't realize this is big stuff.
This is the group from which flew the Enola Gay.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is it. So this man would know the difference between tinfoil, and same thing with his son, Jesse Jr. I mean, he knew the difference. Even he says, as he would say, you know, even as a child at the age of 11 or 12 or whatever he was there at that point, he knew the difference between tinfoil and balsa wood, and this definitely wasn't it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and look, another thing, going back to the original lie that Ramey put out, that it was a weather balloon and, false alarm, right? You know, that press conference, there were just one or two reporters there, maybe one reporter, and a cameraman, photographer, and that's why we have the pictures of Jessie Marcel on the kneeled down on the floor holding up the pieces of a weather balloon. Okay? You look at the look on his face, and it looks like, you guys are not buying this, are you? That's the expression that's on Major Marcel's face. And what's really interesting about this, reporters were from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. And nobody said, when Ramey said it was a misidentified weather balloon, this is Major Marcel, he misidentified it, it was just a weather balloon. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram was, I don't know if it still is, probably not, but it was a major newspaper. It was one of those newspapers that was highly respected across America, like the New York Times, like the Houston Chronicle used to be, like the LA Times. Fort Worth Star-Telegram was one of those newspapers that was highly respected. And that reporter did not say to Ramey, hold on a minute, time out, wait a minute. This is the guy who is the top air intelligence officer in this country, and he does not know what a weather balloon is?
They were picking up weather balloons daily out there, and it's just the whole notion of it is absurd. Then what makes things twice as absurd is when they try to cover up, no, it wasn't just a weather balloon. It was a top secret weather balloon, a mogul balloon.
Mm-hmm.
But they forget, and many of these so-called skeptobunkers, I like that term, by the way, missed the point to find out that, well, was the Mogul balloon that was supposedly set loose, was that accounted for? And the answer was yes. It was recovered because it was never let loose in and around that day because there was bad weather. And it was recovered, and it is accountable, so therefore it cannot be even remotely true.
Well, you know, they didn't know about Chinese wedding candles back then, and you didn't have the Maryland Air National Guard to drop flares. I guess the weather balloon thing was about the best thing they could think of. But the reason that we're even talking about this is a reason I haven't told you. The reason we're even talking about this is something is up, folks. Something is up. Because Roswell has been investigated and investigated and investigated. The Roswell story has been beaten to death two or three times over. And now, here comes this cockamamie story written by a reporter, and it's getting all of this national news airplay. Something is up. There's something that they're trying to get our attention away from. What do you suspect it would be, Sam?
I think there's wind of more information coming out. More witnesses, more deathbed confessions, and I also think we're going to be seeing some very big UFO sightings again because of the earthquakes, and it's going to be undeniable. It's just going to be undeniable. So they'll have to come up with, well, it's our technology, or it's the Russians, or it's the Tasmanian devils. Who knows? It's something
you're on. You know, I like Tasmanian devils. I do. There used to be a cartoon of a Tasmanian devil. You remember that?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
That was my favorite cartoon. You know, forget Bugs Bunny. I like the Tasmanian devil. But, you know, to come out with something so cockamamie, so utterly irrational as this, present it, have a reporter present it, and with a straight face defend it on national television, tells me something big is brewing. They're getting ready to, or maybe they're already doing it, something really big, and they're trying to divert attention away from it.
Always, you will always see this type of maneuver before or after. In fact, Balloon Boy, do you remember the Balloon Boy scenario?
Yeah.
The balloon was the shape of a UFO. It
yeah.
was the shape of a disc, a flying saucer.
That's right.
And where was it set aloft? It was in Fort Collins. That was the home of MUFON. And the other thing was, we had, in and about that time, disclosure coming out, I forget what country, and it was the day before, 2 days before, and that was all over the press. So it was being quelled by nonsense. And so when people, the subliminal suggestion there, oh, it had to, this is all nonsense, UFOs are nonsense, and this guy was, this is all nonsense, this is craziness.
Mm-hmm.
So this happens time and time again. When we did the 10 best cases for Dateline back in 2 years ago, it was soon thereafter we couldn't figure out why it was being held up, but there was a release of flares and balloons in Phoenix. Remember that?
Oh, yes, I do.
Well, and we couldn't figure out why on earth are they holding up the release. They were holding up the release, and I personally feel that this was done to stage, and so they could throw it into the 10 best and have that mentioned in there, to a detraction. And this goes on and on and on and on.
Well, let me tell you something. A local news reporter, you know, when this guy came out, two guys came out and said, yeah, we did it. It was helium balloons and flares. Okay, well, a reporter went to the house, tracked it down, went to the house, and nobody would come to the door. Nobody would answer the telephones. And so they did a little further research on this, and they found out that one of these guys, at least, was attached to the U.S. Navy.
Yes.
Yeah, so, this sort of stuff is, it's just irritating to think that we have grown-ups, supposedly, running our government and in charge of the military who are making these kind of stupid decisions. I mean, it really is disturbing because it really kind of points out that the inmates are running the asylum.
Oh, yeah. D&D operations, detract and debunk.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're doing.
But with all of the other nations around the world that have come out and said, okay, we're not going to hide this anymore. Here's what we've got. France has done it. England's doing it. Who else? I think it was Sweden or Denmark? Brazil, Ecuador, Mexico, Peru. You know, and what they're saying, I think Peru is in that list, and they're saying, okay, here's our files, here's what we've got, and we're not going to cooperate with the cover up anymore. With all of these other nations doing that, it's like America kicked it into high gear.
And I think it's because it's been when you take and hide something and lie about something so long, when the truth comes out and people realize there's what's been going on and how much has this been costing us and how much is it costing us just to hide it, how is it that certain people get their hands on the technology and others don't, and they're going to profit from it? What has already been profited by keeping this from the general public and industry at large, but that could have been mass producing items and making it less expensive.
I hate to do it. We got to step away for break, though. But we're going to come back to why has America kicked this cover up into high gear when we all know they're lying? We'll be back. You are indeed listening to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking with Sam Maranto. And I had asked the question before we went to break. We were discussing why does it seem as all of these other nations around the world are opening their UFO files and they're saying, you know what, we're through with keeping this a secret. We're through with the cover-up. Here's the files. Here's what we've got. With all of that happening around the world, why does it seem that here in the USA they have kicked the cover-up into high gear and intensified it? And you, Sam, were talking about how when you've lied for so long, they realize that once the disclosure is made, people are going to have questions about who's been benefiting from this and what is it costing us.
They're stretching it out for as long as possible to, I think, gain as much technology and control from that technology, an assurance of that. The other thing is that when it becomes blatantly obvious that this technology has been in the hands of specific people, they will be in a position to assure that any ramifications, be it legal or whatever, they'll be comforted. Either they'll be protected either by enough money or resources, power. Either way, that they, I'm sure that's already in place, but you know, an added degree of insurance.
Well, they may just do what they did with the drug companies on the vaccines, where they said, if you take the vaccine and it debilitates you or kills you, the drug companies can't be sued.
Bingo. There'll be something will happen, but either way, you can't let part of the genie out. It's all going to come out. Not all in completely, but for the bulk of it, you know, as far as... I think the other thing is, I really think the bigger question here, reasoning, is it has more to do with who we are, what we are, and why we are. And that, when we delve into that, I think we'll get a better idea as far as are we chattel? Are we the property of something? You know, that that may have a vested interest in keeping things quiet and demanding certain people who are in the know to. You know, therefore you shut up. Otherwise, there are very serious consequences. Who knows?
Well, I think it's obvious that there is a group of people in the United States and around the world who do think the rest of us belong to them.
Oh, I would say that's for sure. But I think on even the higher note, there may be entities out there that feel that we are their possession.
Mm-hmm.
And may have, you know, such as the Watchers, to assure that we stay in place, or those that are empowered stay in place to not release the secret, whatever that may be.
So is there ever going to be disclosure?
No. You know, Rich Dahl and I are very good friends, and we talk almost every day, and, you know, him and Bryce feel that, sure, there's going to be something down the road. I think the disclosures are going to be forced, it's going to be a scenario that it's obvious, now tell me about it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting to that point now. For anybody who has so much as an inkling or ability to investigate and still could read, there's enough information out there, especially today. Go to Amazon, see the volume of quality books and research that's coming out on the topic. Then you look at the government disclosures, actual documentation coming out too, and foreign press. Foreign press, except for the United States and a few other countries, they cover this, and they cover it seriously. They don't play games.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you know, when I lived in Phoenix, the cable company there, one of the things that was available on cable was CCTV, which is China.
Right.
And, of course, it's in English for the English audience, and actually extremely well-done programming. But when it came to UFOs, you know, they just reported it on the news. There was no chuckle, no ha-ha, no, yeah, they think it was, they thought they saw a UFO, but it was American wedding candles. They don't do any of that kind of nonsense. They just report it as an event, just like you would report something else, you know. And I was astounded. Because, I mean, this is China, you know, and we get told that, well, it's a closed society, it's being communist, you know, all of the news is propaganda. But when it came to UFOs, and in fact, all of their news, they just reported it, just reports.
It's news and it should be reported, bottom line. Before I forget, I did have one more translucent UFO case that I want to tell you quickly.
Yeah, go ahead. We got a couple of minutes.
We have a couple minutes here. I-57, a lady's driving along the road, and I spoke to this person. She was a representative in the medical field, and she says it was the darnest thing. All of a sudden, to the side of the car is a translucent UFO. She says this UFO is sitting there, and it's moving along with the traffic. And a good, she was telling me some ridiculous number of cars just stopped and watched this thing move along. And she says, I swear, it was if I could see right into it. But it was there.
And when was this?
During the 80s and during broad daylight. It had been during rush hour and on I-57 going into Chicago.
And there were a bunch of cars that stopped?
Oh, yeah. She said, whatever lane she was in, I believe it was the west lane going in, and that just stopped. People just stopped and watched it. Then it picked up to a crawl because it was sitting there and it was moving along with traffic, and then it just shot off.
Well, that means there had to have been hundreds, if not thousands, of witnesses.
Yes, there had to have been.
And why didn't that get reported in the news?
Exactly.
Obviously, with that many witnesses, a few people had to have called the local radio stations. A few people had to have called the local newspaper. And why haven't we heard about that one?
It's so strange. We had a scenario up in Minnesota similar to that, but this craft, I guess, actually landed, and it was during rush hour, and one news agency was reporting it on the air, but they were getting so many calls that they were told to basically quell it because it was getting to the point of hysteria.
Wow.
Never gotten to the news, you know, as far as the press.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I knew about it is because from somebody living up there actually called me and told me the account verbatim.
All right. Well, Sam, I want to thank you for being with us again tonight. It's always interesting when you're here.
Thank you very much, and it's always a pleasure.
All right, stay on the line with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it. That's a wrap for this evening. Remember, we have a free weekly newsletter, and if you haven't subscribed, you need to do so. Also remember, we're listener supported. You didn't hear us play any commercials tonight, and you won't. We're listener supported. Stand with us, and we'll all stand. We've got a show tomorrow night that I think is going to blow your socks off. So you want to be sure that you tune in tomorrow night. Remember that show that we talked about the pyramids and Cygnus? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.